All right, Joey, I am so excited. Do you like Joey? I know we already started recording and people are just going to hear this because this is me. Because I'm like, doctor, if I got a PhD, I'd be like, everyone call me doctor.
No, you wouldn't.
I have one of my assistant coaches. She has a PhD and I'm always like, should I call you doctor? And she's like, no, it's fine. I'm like, I would abuse it, but it's fine. So Joey, I'm super excited to have you on because like I said, before we actually started, I binged all of your content and I absolutely love everything that you stand for. And I'm honestly curious, this is the question I kind of start with for everyone, just because I'm nosy. What got you into fitness?
What got me into fitness, if we talk about originally, it was just my parents like living a healthy lifestyle, essentially. That's something I've talked about a good amount of times on my podcast, just how lucky we are if we had parents who were into fitness, because it's such a big influential factor. So my mom's always been into working out. My dad has always been in really good shape. He would come home from work and like do pushups at home. And so I grew up seeing that and I was like, man, I want to be like my dad. What does my dad do to look like that? He goes to the gym. And so that's where my passion for fitness started. Mm-hmm. I started going to the gym probably when I wanted to start a lot earlier, but I started going when I was 15 because my mom wouldn't let me go.
It's pretty early.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. For me, it's always been a safe space and like a happy space. So I've just been into it for so long now.
Yeah. It's interesting because obviously you have a deep love for health and fitness because again, you have your PhD in nutrition science. So that it has to be something deeper than that to keep you going for that long. It's a lot of school to just be like, I just liked it.
So it's funny. I think I developed a deep love for it just because I saw how positively it impacted my life, as cliche as that sounds, even like at a very right. And it's funny, like when I talk about getting a PhD and I've recorded episodes talking about my, like, I guess, what's the word here? Like career journey and how I ended up where I am now. And it was never planned. It wasn't like in high school, I was like, I want to have a career in fitness or anything like that. But really what happened was I originally wanted to do music professionally. And I wanted to maybe perhaps cook professionally too, because I love cooking. And I've been all over the place.
I feel like so many fitness professionals have been though, which is so funny.
Yeah. Well, when I went to college, I played the saxophone and the guitar and I wanted to pursue playing the saxophone professionally.
Wow.
And I was in the marching band in college and all of this stuff. And I had a conversation with my mom one day and she was like, you know, you're most likely going to be broke if you do the music thing. And I was like, you know, you're right. And so I did fitness, which like honestly isn't all that much better from a
I was gonna say.
Unless you're smart, like business-wise, right? Like just a job in fitness, you're not gonna do all that well. But anyways, I just remember thinking, like, well, what else do I like? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I like exercise, so I'll pick exercise science as a major. And I didn't really know what it was. And funny enough, I actually had to change my major in undergraduate from exercise science to nutrition. Because I got kicked out of the major, as silly as that sounds. I just wasn't a good student when I was really young because it was essentially, I was very irresponsible. That's what it was.
Okay. Like,
I wouldn't care about deadlines for classes and things like that. So I did some very stupid things just from not being responsible. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like I couldn't do the stuff or anything like that. It was just lack of responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so my thought was, well, what's the closest thing to exercise science? Nutrition. And I like cooking. Mm-hmm. So I just went into a nutrition major.
Yeah.
And then I started realizing I really love science because that was not something that I previously knew about myself. So when I started taking like chemistry courses and biochemistry and organic chemistry and all that stuff, I really liked it. Mm-hmm. And I think I liked it because naturally my brain just works that way. So I gravitated towards those subjects more than like, I don't know, writing or anything literature-based because I wasn't naturally good at that. Mm-hmm. And then I just remember an undergraduate, I was like, well, I can't do anything with a bachelor's degree in nutrition. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go to grad school. I like school. So I'm just going to keep going. And then when I started my master's, I didn't know what a PhD was. And a professor was like, hey, do you want to do a PhD with me? Because him and I had a good connection. I was doing well in his class. And I was like, man, school's really expensive. I don't think I really want to take out loans to do a PhD. And he was like, no, that's not how it works. Yeah. And they're like, your tuition is paid and you'll teach a class and we'll pay you. I was like, really? And he was like, yeah. And that was the deciding factor for me. That's how I ended up doing a PhD. And My whole like journey, and I say this to everybody who asks me about like career advice, the framework that has always guided me is like, what options do I have available now? And just take the one that sounds the best without giving too much thought into the future, because that's just how I've always operated and it's worked out just fine.
Well, that's
so
good.
Probably not the answer you were expecting.
No, it's funny. I think the majority of people who I actually speak to of PhDs, their number one tip to me is like, don't go get a PhD. And I'm like, that's so like counterintuitive to what I would expect, because I would think that that was like what you were hoping for your whole life. People are like, no, it really just kind of happened where I just kind of kept going to school. And I'm like, that doesn't just happen, but I get it. I get what you're saying.
So it happens when you like don't want to dive into the real world and you don't really know what you're doing with your degree. And you're like, well, school's working out just fine, so I'll keep going to school.
That's fair. And eventually, again, you get actually paid to go to school instead of having to pay to go to school. So it's kind of like now
minimally,
it's,
you get paid to survive.
I know one of my assistant coaches, she's currently getting her PhD. So I have one with one and then one is getting one. And she's like making better money coaching right now.
Easily. Yes. Easily.
So, but you have your own coaching team, and I found it. So there's a lot of questions I have only because you recently did a post that I found very interesting and you got some interesting comments on. I was surprised by where you were talking about, because we actually did a similar post talking about somebody who had commented that people who are overweight are lazy or lack discipline and they don't like them. And it was interesting because, and I wasn't initially going to talk about this, but you ended up posting this and I was like, oh, this is an interesting conversation, because I appreciate that we have a very similar view on this, because I think too often in this profession, especially, it's more interesting that you've always grown up in the fitness space, kind of always really loving fitness. And it sounds like you have a very open mind to it. So I'm curious, one, if you want to expand on what the actual thought was the post that I'm saying, and then also where you kind of come from with it.
Yeah. So I'll start first by saying where I come from and then discuss the post specifically. Okay. So even though I've been into fitness, I struggled with my weight a ton when I was younger. Mm. It was mainly just because I come from a Hispanic background and like food is kind of like the answer to everything, right?
Food is everything.
I've always been really active. Even before 15, like before lifting weights, I was always playing sports several hours per day. Like I've always been very active. But we just had really good food at home and I would always eat a ton. So I struggled a ton with my weight when I was a young teenager.
Okay.
And I got made fun of a ton. And that was one of the reasons too why fitness was like something I really loved, because I saw how it transformed my body and then how that affected the way that people treated me as well. Mm-hmm. But regardless, then when I was a young adult, I would say I was not aligned with the same like way of thinking that I do now. Like I was definitely more simple-minded when it came to people being overweight or obese. To put it plainly, like I used to think people were lazy and like they just didn't care about their health, right? And I think my perspective has shifted greatly just from working with people. I have so many clients, and I'm sure you do as well, who do really struggle with their weight. And to say that they're lazy is just ridiculous, right? Because they work hard. Honestly, if we talk about hard work, they probably work harder than some of us. We just have systems that work for us that don't require a ton of work.
Yeah.
Actually, I would argue that most people who are in shape, it doesn't feel hard to them, right? And I would also argue that like doing something, even if you do it consistently, if you enjoy doing it, which I enjoy working out, it isn't necessarily hard work, right? Yeah. So the argument of like, I'm so disciplined and stuff is like, no, you enjoy going to the gym. Like, yes, you are disciplined for sure, but you enjoy it. Like real discipline and like, to me is doing something that you really don't enjoy. And like you do it consistently, right? Regardless, the whole post was essentially to try to share why I don't think it's right to discriminate against people or some sort of classification, right?
Yes.
And whether that classification is the shape of your body, or in the video, I mainly—
You don't have to share everything if you don't want to.
No, that's fine. I use the example of race, right? And like, I was saying, how is this any different than discriminating for somebody's skin color? It's an attribute, right? And the main argument, like the main backlash was that race and weight are not the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I understand that argument. I'm not saying that that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that people of certain skin colors haven't endured way worse things, mm-hmm. perhaps to people who are overweight. What I'm simply trying to say is that classifying people based mm-hmm. off of some sort of variable, especially a group of people that are doing you no harm, and mm-hmm. then like having some sort of prejudice against them is messed up, right? Yes. Like, regardless of what that group of people have experienced or gone mm-hmm. through, it's just the idea of like classifying people and then just like making fun of them for some particular reason, or saying fat people are lazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the language that that guy used was way more extreme than that, which is why I really didn't like it. But that's pretty much the gist of what I was trying to say. And it's funny how much backlash I got. Did you have a similar experience talking about that?
I get a lot of experiences talking like about that because, so I'm on a clothing brand's team, Buff Bunny Collection, and they have a couple models who are, I think they're like triple XL, and they had done a post and they had received a ton of backlash about it where they were showing different sizes. And I did a response video where I'm like, people get upset that athletic wear clothing companies have people of different body sizes, but what do you expect people to wear when they work out? And then like across the screen, it like flashed like workout clothes. And it was funny because it got, even that post got a lot of backlash. And then recently I did another video where it was a similar person doing like a podcast episode where they're just like, I'm not just disgusted by fat people when I see them, but I don't think I'd be friends with somebody like that. And I'm like,
yeah, imagine if you said that about any other group of people.
Yeah, I'm like, right? What makes you think that's okay?
Because people were saying like, oh, you can't change your race, and that's the reason why that's not okay, and this is okay. And I was like, okay, then let's just sub out race with religion. Like, you can choose your religion, or you can choose not to be religious. Like, we as a society, like, accept that making fun of people's religion is not cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how is this any different? And the main point I was trying to make, which I think people missed as well, like, so many people were like, it's not, we shouldn't normalize obesity. Mm-hmm. It's not healthy.
Yes.
And it's like, I have never said those words, right? Like, first off, normalizing, that's not a good term because it's normal. Like, a large percent of our population has a high body fat percentage. So
I'm pretty sure it's the majority right now.
Actually. Yeah. In terms of obese, it's overweight or obese. Yes. Obese alone. No. But I think it's like 40% around there.
Okay.
Regardless, so a large percentage of the population, right? So the term, I don't like the term normalizing it, but the idea of saying that it's healthy or it's, you know, not something that's negatively affecting health, like, nobody's saying that. It's like, we all acknowledge that. We know that that's true. And the funny thing is that then you get backlash from people of like the healthy at every size community saying that, like, no, like, obesity is not bad at all. It's like, no, objectively, like, excess body fat can have negative implications on your health. That's very clear. But that doesn't mean that we should just be assholes to a certain group of people, right? Like, actually, if you want to help them, you should be really kind. You should be really supportive.
Mm-hmm.
You should talk to them and see what they're struggling with. A couple of people who have undergone drastic weight loss commented on the post, and they were like, listen, as somebody who has lost over 100 pounds or whatever the number is, this resonates because we are our own worst critics, right? Like, people who struggle with their weight, most of them don't feel really good about it, right? They probably, you know, unfortunately have some negative self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
And you, like, essentially validating that isn't really helpful, right?
It's feeding it.
Yeah, exactly. Not just feeding it, but it's just like, why? You wouldn't like that.
It's not helping.
Team, right?
Yeah. It's,
I know, there's a lot to unpack there.
I know. Well, I do appreciate you sharing the fact that, like, your perspective around this has changed over the years, because I'm very similar, where when I was younger, I was naturally very lean, and then I ended up gaining weight in college, and I realized it when I had already gained the weight. Like, it was something I didn't really notice until it had happened, and I was like 60 pounds heavier, and I'm like, where did this come from? And then when I started to lose weight, I did it in all of the wrong ways. And then it wasn't sustainable. I ended up gaining all of the weight back plus more. So now I'm like 70, 75 pounds overweight. And then I tried to lose weight again in an unsustainable way. And I ended up being like left by a bikini coach, and I'm just, I'm like 104 pounds at this point now. So I went from one extreme to another, and it took finding people like Lane Norton or Paul Revelio or like some of the OGs in the fitness space to then like educate myself and be like, wow, I'm really doing terrible things to my body. But one thing it really taught me was, one, it wasn't a choice, because I didn't know better. And I tried to seek out advice, but I ended up finding a lot of the wrong people before I found a lot of the right people. And also one thing that I say now all of the time in general is, you'll never hate yourself into a body you love. Because even at my leanest, I didn't like myself.
Yeah.
And it's, it's,
I had a, sorry to interrupt you there.
No,
I had a conversation on my podcast with a friend of mine. His name's David Roden. I'm not sure. Are you familiar
with
him?
I don't know who that is.
No. So he's lost over 200 pounds and maintained his weight loss for over a decade now.
Wow.
And he said like the biggest thing that helped him was just like celebrating every small win along the way. If people don't understand, like, you need to be positive if you want to positively impact your health. Like you can't, like you said, you can't be negative and have positive outcomes, right?
Yeah.
So I love that you brought that up.
People think that by not promoting shame, we're promoting toxic positivity. And I'm like, no, the majority of people who do share these things and share these opinions truly believe in taking action, trying to actually do things to better yourself, but also recognizing it's not going to benefit you to hate yourself along the way. I'm curious, do you do anything in your coaching to kind of reinforce that?
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that I do when I work with a new client, you know, when I onboard them, like I talk about my coaching philosophies, like actually I share it with them in a document. And like, one of the main things is that like, we're going to support each other. Two-way communication is important. I'm here to help you, but you need to work hard, right? Like it's not one or the other.
Yeah.
But that combination really does work, right? Cause you're, when you're willing to put in the work and you have somebody guiding you who actually cares about you and is being supportive, then things start to happen, right? So to answer your question, totally, right? It's not like you're either promoting hard work or you're promoting like not working at all.
Yeah.
Hard work is required. It's the same thing as with anything in life, right? Like anything you want to excel at in life, you need to work hard. But you should also think of it from, I'm trying to think exactly here how I'm trying to word this. Like even with business, right? Like if you're doing something out of anger or negativity, it's probably not going to last too long.
No.
And so I would say with coaching, it's just that. I mean, you have to definitely support the client. The client has to be willing to work hard. It's not one or the other. I know I'm spinning in circles here.
No,
it's
you're good.
Partially because I forgot what your original question was.
I like the way to try to like think of what the question was like kind of asking again and again. I was basically asking like, how do you actually help your clients do this through your coaching?
Okay, great. So essentially what we do is there's so many moving parts here, right? Ensuring that the client's in a good position to actually make change.
Yeah.
And I think the best way to do that is just having an open and honest conversation with a potential client as to why they're trying to do this, right? And I tell clients up front, like, if you're just doing this for aesthetic reasons, that's fine, but it might not be as strong of a motivating factor as something that's deeper, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, people really are ready to make change once they've experienced something that's pretty negative, right? Whether it's health scare or whatever it may be. So first and foremost, it's identifying the person's ready to change. Two, it's developing a plan that's actually sustainable long-term, right? So when I coach clients, it's from a nutrition, exercise, and habit perspective. So I don't take clients on for just nutrition or just exercise because
I've
done that before and it's just like not that helpful.
No.
And I also enjoy being able to work with people when we can work on all of these different aspects, right? So developing a plan that's sustainable, that means not crash dieting, right?
Yeah.
If they're going to be looking at their caloric intake, making it a moderate caloric deficit if they're working on weight loss while simultaneously working on healthy dietary habits, right? So I have a list of what I call like my master habits that I like for all of my clients to develop. Things around certain food choices and protein and fiber, fruits and veggies, all of that good stuff that everybody should be doing. And when I talk about the word sustainable from a habit perspective, it's really starting with just a couple and making sure that we're executing on them. And if we are, then maybe adding another one or two every month or so. And if you're struggling with the habits that you're working on, talk about why you're struggling with them, right? And in general, it's really just an ongoing feedback process there with making sure that things are working. And if they're not, talk about why. And anytime you have an interaction, it's really being supportive is really the word, right? Rather than, it's funny because I've worked with clients And when we start, they tell me like, if you need to be rough around the edges, or just like, you could give it to me straight. Right. I'm like, listen, that's not the type of person I am. I'm not going to reprimand you. Like, you didn't hire me, you know, that's not what I'm here to do. And it's funny because people who have been coached before have had that experience prior where it's like,
oh yeah.
Coaches think that their clients need
tough love.
Yeah. Yeah. And some tough love can be useful at times. Right.
I was going to say, we actually added that as a question for our intake form weekly check-in for our clients. We're like, what do you need more of from me this week? And we ask like empathy, grace, tough love, things like that. So in that way, they can kind of communicate to us what they feel like they need, because we don't want to make assumptions. And we've found that to be like such a transformative question.
That's a really good question to include. That's funny. I can kind of pick up on those things intuitively when I start to know my clients. And you said earlier, I have a coaching team. It's just myself. So I don't have a team. It's just me working with clients at the moment. I do plan on having a team at some point. So for me, it's all just based off how I do things, how I interact with people.
Yeah.
I'll give more tough love if it's been, you know, sometimes you work with a client and it's been, I don't know, 3-4 weeks in a row where they're like, oh, this wasn't a good week. Like, next week will be a little bit better. Like, the first time, okay, sure, things happen. The second time, hey, what's going on? The third time, hey, we need to talk about this, right?
Yeah.
And my tough love is more of like, hey, you should really think about why you're doing this in the first place.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yes, you can have fun with your life, but there needs to be certain restrictions. And if these goals are important to you for the reasons that you said, it's mainly just reminding themselves of why they initially set out on this journey in the first place and why they want to do this. And that sort of tough love can be really motivating, I've found.
Yeah. I think people sometimes, it's funny because I come from group fitness. Like, I was a personal trainer in person, and then I also did group fitness at the same time and as a group fitness instructor. And a lot of people just wanted the hype from me. And I'm like, I don't want to be your hype man. I'm like, I love you. I'm excited for you. I am going to cheer for you, but I don't want you to just be motivated by me. Like, I want you to actually make change on your own. And it was one of the most interesting lessons I learned from doing group fitness. And one of the reasons I was like, one of the many reasons I ended up leaving it, because I was like, you know, I don't feel like I'm actually helping people make long-term sustainable change by just like, work harder, move faster, like bump to the music. So it was just interesting. Yeah.
Well, I feel like group fitness people do for fun as well. So they like want that energy. They're like, I'm going to go to a class. It needs to be high energy.
That's
funny because I'm the same way. Like, I don't see my role as a coach as like being somebody's motivator.
Yes.
Although it is our job to motivate them sometimes. It's not like I am your sole source of motivation, right?
Yeah.
That's not it at all. And that's actually like not my personality either. So I'm not that type of person.
You're not a cheerleader?
I do cheer for my clients, but I'm not.
No, I know.
If somebody struggles with like motivation, like I'm probably not the person. I guess that's a wrong way of saying it.
No, but like, there's a reason you said that. So I'm curious, like why?
I don't know. I'm very big on like, hey, if we're going to work together, you need to be ready to work. I'm not here to try to get you to a point where you're ready to work. I want to work with people who are ready to work, but they feel lost. So
that's fair.
See my role more as like showing you the right way and helping with accountability through useful strategies to make this feel as easy as possible for you.
Yeah.
But you need to be internally motivated. And you will feel more motivated once you start seeing results. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I talked about the motivation thing is because we've all had experiences working with clients. Where they see you more as like their cheerleader, for lack of a better word, right? Like, oh man, and they want to talk to you every day to get some motivation and stuff like that. It's like that type of person. The reason why I have a hard time working with that type of person is because I truly think that that type of person is not in the right place to make change yet, right? How do you get from there to where you need to make change? That's a great question.
I like how you already knew where the question was going to go.
Yeah. I've just seen it happen time and time again. Like, some people just aren't ready to make change. And I think a variable that is really important there is being internally motivated to do the stuff that you need to do.
That's fair.
Yeah.
It's fair. Cause I think that it's interesting because some coaches want a handhold, and it's funny because at first people, when they first came to me, thought that that's what they were going to get from me. But then they realize I'm just very straightforward. I'm not mean ever. I'm very straightforward. And I'm very direct. And if I find that things are slacking off, like, I'm always Atomic Habits is one of my favorite books ever. And James Clear always says, like, never miss twice. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I say that same thing to my clients. I'm like, if we miss once, it's an accident. If we miss twice, there's something we can fix. And so we try to figure out what opportunities we have. And I think what happens when coaches want to be the motivator is they become somebody the client has to be with forever yeah. to maintain it. When the goal as a coach and as an educator should be to provide autonomy or get that client to have more autonomy on their journey. So that's a yeah. very fair approach that you have.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's just also my innate personality. Like
I could tell.
I am sometimes high energy, but oftentimes not very high energy. So here's the thing. I'm very big on like reciprocity, right? Like if I'm going to put a lot of energy into you, you got to put a lot of energy into this. Mm-hmm. So I just naturally, if I'm working with somebody who isn't really putting in the work that's necessary and just, there's a lot to unpack here. My personality is like, I am a big believer in taking ownership of your actions, right? Which was one of the things that I found funny when people were commenting on that post saying that like, you normalize this or whatever. And I'm like, no, not at all. Because I'm a big believer in taking responsibility of your own actions. So if you are somebody who's not, and you're complaining about things and this and that, like once or twice, it's okay. But then I'm like, man, like you probably, you know, you're in some ways wasting my time and I'm in some ways wasting your time and money as well. Right. So maybe this just isn't the right fit. And I'm always open. It's so funny because I think coaches are so like anti-refund sometimes for packages, but I'd rather just be like, hey, listen, this wasn't a good fit. Mm-hmm. We both wasted some of our time. Just here's your money and we can part ways and it's fine. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, I forgot your original question.
I think we were talking about like motivation. Honestly, I kind of forgot it too, because it's a good point where I think that, again, I think that it's interesting because I can sense maybe some like hesitation around what you had said, just because I feel like you don't want people to feel alienated or feel like attacked potentially. And I 100% get that, because that's what I'm always very conscious about in my content and the things that I say too, because I want to make sure that while I'm saying that I want people to show up for themselves, I want them to take action, I want them to be ready to make change, I'm also understanding that some people aren't. And that doesn't mean you're a bad person. It doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. It doesn't mean that I think you're lazy or you lack discipline. It means, and this is an interesting thing that I've become more hyper aware of when I think something used to trigger me, I'm more aware of it when I'm going to say it. Like people think that I'm saying that just because fitness isn't necessarily the priority for you right now, that some people take that in a negative light and they think, well, you're just calling me lazy. And I'm like, well, no, it's not the priority right now. Yeah, and sometimes that's okay.
Exactly. I had a experience just like this very recently, where somebody hired me for coaching because their wedding was coming up in like 2 months. Mm. And it was a guy, he was getting married and he wanted to lose some weight to be a little bit leaner for his wedding or whatnot. I think that's a goal that a lot of people have.
Yeah.
And so when we had an initial consultation, I asked them like, what are some of the barriers for you to be where you want to be, right? Like, what are the things that you're actively struggling with? Because when somebody hires a coach, it's not like their first option. Mm-hmm. They've likely tried a couple things and it hasn't worked. Mm-hmm. And he was like, honestly, man, for me right now, it's been time because I have this new business that I'm getting up and running and all of these other things. And he was truly really busy. He was working really long days on top of planning the wedding, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I told him, I was like, man, just know that this stuff is going to add to your weekly load. This is going to take time. You're gonna need to put some time aside to meal prep. You're gonna need to put some time aside for your workouts. And he was and I asked him, I was like, are you sure you're willing to do that? And he was like, yeah, I'm good to do it. Let's do it. And so I was like, all right, I believe you. And we started working together, and about a month in, he was just not ready to do it. Right.
Yeah. Like
he kept, I'm going to use the word excuse, but I'm not using the word excuse in a negative fashion. But he kept having the excuse that like he had to work these long hours because his business was something that he needed to continue to grow. And so I asked him, and I was like, listen, what is more priority right now? Is it your business at the moment, or is it, you know, your weight and your body composition? There's no right or wrong answer. He's like, man,
yes,
right. My business is my priority right now. And I was like, listen, let's put coaching on pause. your money's not going anywhere. You're not going to lose the rest of your coaching term, but let's not continue right now because you're just not in a place to do it. And it's frustrating for him. I'm sure he doesn't feel good about checking in, like not having done the stuff he has to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's frustrating for me to like have to chase a client and be like, hey, what's going on and this and that, right? So that's the general approach that I use. It's like, be very open and direct and like, hey, if you think you're willing to do it, I'm there with you, right? Like if you say, yes, I'm ready, cool, let's do it. But if along the way we realize that like you're not, then we revisit that, right?
Yeah.
And it's the quote unquote tough love, but it's not really tough love. It's just being honest about things.
And that's the hard thing with our society is we haven't, coming from somebody who was terrible at communication for the longest time, and I'm still working on it. Like, I think that's always, that's something we're all always working on, I think. And for so long, I thought being direct with people was being mean. And I realized that not being direct with people is doing them a disservice, especially as a coach. And I've recognized, I feel grateful where I used to be very, I'll use this word lightly, but I used to be like triggered by a lot of stuff very easily because I was insecure about it and I didn't want to be labeled those things. And it was very sensitive to me. So it's made me more hyper aware when I say things like that, like the fact that you're just like, oh, I don't want to say the word excuses, but like, I am going to use the word excuses because like I would do the same thing where I'm telling someone, hey, I understand that it's not truly like a bad excuse. It's you have other priorities and that's okay, but you need to be aware of them. I think Brené Brown's one of my favorites when it comes to like vulnerability and like awareness, because so many people lack awareness around their priorities and lack understanding of like the deep rooted things, like the kind of messiness inside of us that's kind of holding us back. And sometimes like that is what it is that we just don't even know what we actually want to achieve or what's actually important to us. Cause who knows, like maybe the health and fitness stuff is important to him because there's a reason that he reached out to you in the first place, but it's just not painful enough yet for him to make a change.
Yeah. Or maybe it's just something that like they know they want to do. Right. Yeah. But it's like, maybe it's just not right now. You brought up a lot of good stuff there. Yeah, it's funny because one of the things that clients value the most is when you can be direct like that with them.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, I think when you coach, you start becoming really aware of like how words actually affect the way people perceive things.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really important to think about how you communicate, but also be able to communicate in a way that reminds people of, as you mentioned, their priorities, goals, et cetera, without being mean or rude.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, oftentimes people just take things personally because of insecurities. Mm-hmm. Right? I honestly haven't had a bad experience with a client like that, at least not face to face, where I've shared something with them and they haven't been open to receiving that feedback.
Yeah.
I would say the vast majority of times people are very open to it and appreciative of it. I've had a couple experiences where like, when I used to work for Team BioLane, where like a client would go to somebody else and like tell them something. And it usually was a client that like, you know, never checked in. I never heard from this and that. So I'm going to go to like whoever's higher up and they're like, I didn't get my coaching service, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I haven't checked in like 2 months. What are you talking about?
You're like, wait a minute.
Usually people are appreciative. Yeah.
Well, it's different too. Cause I actually, it's funny. I was wondering that. Cause I know you said that you work for yourself and I was like, I thought he was on Team Lane North. I thought it was on Lane's team for some reason. I didn't actually know. I had no idea. So I was curious. Cause then I saw the Fit for Life Academy and I was like, oh, I think he has his own thing. This is exciting.
Yeah. As of probably 7 months ago now, around there.
Oh, so exciting.
Months. Yeah. Yeah. I was part. So I finished graduate school in 2021 and then Lane was somebody who I'd been following for really long time. And then talking about like seeing what opportunities are. So what I said earlier about like just taking the opportunity that seems best at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I've also been somebody who like asks for opportunities, right? Because I forgot who said it, but I saw this quote somewhere and I was like, that's really good. And then I just implemented it. Whereas like something along the lines of like asking for the things you want.
Yeah.
Right? Not like being, not feeling like you are
entitled to
deserving
it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But just like, hey, if you want something and you know somebody can help you get there or facilitate that, just ask, right?
Yeah.
And so Lane was somebody who I've always looked up to, and I just reached out to him. I was like, hey man, like I'm in graduate school right now. Is there anything I could do to be involved with you? I would ideally want to have the same career you have. Like that was my email to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I originally started by doing some writing on his website.
Oh wow.
So I was doing articles on his website, like, I don't know, well, many years ago, probably close to like 8 or 9 years ago now.
Oh, wow.
And then when I was finishing my PhD, I really realized I didn't want to be a professor. For a long time, I thought I did.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, yeah, just the academic environment is very political and I didn't like
it.
So I reached out to Lane. And I was like, hey, man, I used to write articles for you. Is there a possibility of me having a job with you after I finish school? Not really knowing what coaching was or anything like that either. Again, jumping into something that I didn't know what was going to happen. And he offered me a position. I was like, yep, let's do it. And that was it. And so I did that for about 3 years.
Wow.
And yeah, from 2021, I guess 2.5 years until last year. And then I've always wanted to do my own thing. I think that's always been in my heart. And there were things that I wanted to do slightly differently. You know, like when you work with a company, there's a certain framework, you do things in a certain fashion. I wanted to do things differently.
Yeah.
So I decided to leave and do my own thing, which was really difficult. But, you know, talking about earlier, like we mentioned, well, you do the same thing. So when you said earlier, talking about like fitness and my passion for fitness and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I've become more passionate about it because I see how positively it impacts other aspects of my life too. Right. Mm-hmm. And this might sound a little cliche, but I think that part of the strength that it took to like leave a job and do it on my own and being confident that I would be able to do it and that I'm just going to do what it takes and do the hard work comes from the same lessons that I learned earlier in life, not just from lifting, but from organized sports and just like the lessons that you really get from fitness, right? Because if you want to have any success in fitness, you need to work hard. It's that simple. And that can translate over to anything else, right? So I don't know. I think doing hard things regularly gives you more strength to do other hard things. And that's 100% why I'm such a component of like fitness and health. And I don't know. I think everything's interconnected in that sense.
It very much is. And it's interesting because I always see a quote, which I don't actually know the quote, so I'm going to say what it roughly is in my brain, where it's like the weights don't get lighter, you just get stronger. And it's kind of the same concept where if you want to keep progressing in fitness, you can't keep lifting the same weights. You eventually have to lift a little bit heavier. You have to do a couple more reps. And so it's always so interesting to think of, because I love more of like the kind of mindset stuff, because I think that that's such an important part of people's journey. And it's such an underrated part. As I mentioned with like my own personal journey is I struggled a lot with mental health and depression and anxiety and my own personal struggles. And I was never guided towards any resources or education on how to actually better my mental health. And I kind of just found fitness because that I just was overweight and insecure. And that was the thing that I thought was going to like fix all my problems. It made me a lot happier because it gave me energy, made me feel good, but it didn't fix anything. And that was part of the reason for the yo-yoing. And then that's when I got really into mindset because I'm like, well, there has to be something that's missing here. And I think that's one of the biggest issues in the fitness space is it doesn't get talked about enough when people have poor mental health or when people struggle with like losing somebody or anxiety or like you just had a baby like a year ago, right?
Yeah, almost a year and a half now.
That's a life change.
Yeah, so that was a big pressure too with like leaving that position and starting my own thing because my wife's a stay-at-home mom. That's something we decided we wanted to do because I mean, she was pretty much just like born to be a mom. So she just wants to be with the baby 24/7. And it's nice that I can work from home and I know that he's in good hands, obviously. And so like leaving a position like that and then be like, all right, now it's all on my shoulders, got to do it on my own. Even though I'm also like a calculated person. So I didn't just say like, let's see if this works out, right?
Hopefully
I
felt like it does.
I was in a really good position to actually have success with it.
Good.
But I do think that a lot of that strength came from seeing small wins along the way. It's parallels nicely with fitness, right? I was going to say something you were talking earlier about mindset. I totally blanked on that.
Growth mindset.
It was an important point. No,
weights don't get lighter.
It was a story. I was going to tell a story. As you'll notice, it's funny because as you mentioned about paraphrasing a quote, I really forget things quickly. And then when I was in graduate school, like everybody remembered like every reference off the top of their head and I've never been that way.
Yeah.
So I apologize if I forget things.
No, you're so fine. It's funny because I'll remember pieces or like the main part of the message that I want to say, but I'll never remember it verbatim. And so I'm always just prefacing for everyone, like, I'm going to butcher this quote. I promise I'm going to give you what you need to know from it though. And so just, hey, you guys go, but you're good. But I know we have to start wrapping up soon-ish. And so obviously, like I said, I love your content. And I think it's very interesting how you've kind of navigated creating content that provides very high level education, but in an easily digestible way, because it doesn't feel like it's trying to go over someone's head, or you feel like you're trying to sound like better than someone. It actually sounds like you're actually trying to help them, which is great. And I'm curious, with your content, I'm going to shift my question in the middle of it, because I'm just curious, and now I'm going to be nosy. What are some of the worst fitness myths that you hate in the fitness space?
Oh my God.
Just did the Diet Coke one. And so I was laughing at that.
We can even just like say just nutrition wise, since that's my,
let's do nutrition. Like, yeah.
There's just like so many.
We laugh because it's like, we know them now.
So here's the thing. And I'll make some generalizations here.
Go for it.
Nutrition is very nuanced, right? Yes. And 90% of the information, made up statistic there, is okay. The vast majority of the information about nutrition on social media is very black and white.
Yes.
So my biggest pet peeve is when people just oversimplify things and present it as good, bad. Mm-hmm. That's essentially my main issue. So if we talk about any specific example, whether it's artificial sweeteners or this food or that food, it's just when people make claims that are very black and white. Mm. And some of the most popular ones, I don't know. The thing is, with every topic, there's like 10 smaller topics, right? If we talk about artificial sweeteners are bad. But then people talk about like causes diabetes, insulin spikes, causes this, cancer, X, Y, Z, right? So like for every one food that people say it's bad, there's like 100 different reasons as to why it's bad, right? And what people do there, and by the way, for those of you guys listening, you can apply what I just said to any food, okay? I said artificial sweeteners, but if anybody says that any food, whether it's a very healthy food or a very highly processed food, you can apply this same sort of logic. Mm-hmm. When people take one food or an ingredient in food and say it's bad for this reason, and then they sound smart by saying some sort of scientific reasoning, it's just not correct. It's not fully correct, because with nutrition, everything is context specific.
Yes.
So I just published a podcast episode, shameless plug, with my good friend.
Go for it.
Dr. Adrian Chavez. He's somebody else who I highly respect in the field. And we just talked about, for like an hour and a half, why the terms healthy and unhealthy are not the best terms to use when talking about specific foods, right? Yeah. So first off, when we talk about health, what are we talking about? We're talking about there is markers of subjective health, right? How you feel. Mm-hmm. And then there are markers of objective health, like your blood lipids and everything else, right? Blood biomarkers, risk for disease, et cetera. And there are things that influence your health markers more than others, right? So in the context of artificial sweeteners, I make an argument that in some situations, artificial sweeteners can be healthy. And people are just like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Well, listen, there's a lot of data showing that if people use artificial sweeteners, they can naturally reduce their caloric intake, right? Because it's not rocket science. Like, they're just not getting the calories from added sugars. They're substituting it for artificial sweeteners, and they're still like getting to satisfy their sweet cravings.
Yeah.
And so they naturally eat a little bit less. If that person is somebody who would benefit from losing weight, right? And we know that weight loss can reduce blood pressure, blood lipids, et cetera. And they can lose some weight by strategically using artificial sweeteners, their health is going to improve. How can you argue that that wasn't part of a healthy lifestyle?
Yeah.
Right? Now, am I arguing that it's the same thing as water? No. But I'm not going to sit here and say that there's much evidence to say that it's way worse than water either, because they're just really, like, if we objectively look at science, there isn't much data to support that.
Yeah.
And you can also even, this is the thing, like, people talk about specific ingredients in artificial sweet or specific artificial sweeteners and why they're bad, or ingredients in diet soda. You can make the same argument for water. There is heavy metals in some sources of, like, the thing is, all the arguments lack nuance, right? If you're talking about a specific thing, in what dose, in what context, in general, if you hear people say this is bad and give no further detail, it's wrong. Somebody who is properly educated and giving you good information is going to say this food may cause some harm at these doses, in this context, right? Provide more information that's going to actually explain when and why certain things are bad. I know that's a very long-winded answer to say that that's my biggest pet peeve.
No, I love that. No, I love that so much. First of all, I love it because it also validates me, which makes me very happy. So I'm just like shameless, like just validation there. Cause that was, I had one of my assistant coaches on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and we went on this kind of rampage of how we're like, if you see people posting online saying good or bad, or like you can never have this, run, unfollow them immediately, run away. It's not even worth your time questioning what they're going to say, because their odds are they're either trying to sell you something, or they benefit from the company that they're promoting, or they just don't know what they're talking about. And I just run. I understand very much why that's your biggest pet peeve, because again, in the mindset sense, like, I tried not to swear there because I was about to swear and I was like, don't do it, Alex. The crappy thing there is people love absolutes. We love it because it is so much easier to have somebody tell me, never eat added sweeteners, never eat oatmeal, never eat carbs, never eat fats. Like, we've gone through all of these different phases of dieting everywhere. It's so much easier to hear that because it gives me a very rigid rule, a very easy rule to follow. Yeah. The problem with that is, one, you're probably not going to follow that forever. Like, let's just be real. It's not realistic for you to follow. Also, you don't need to. Like, in the context of wanting to lose weight or wanting to live a healthier life, unless — this is my own personal opinion, so correct me if I'm wrong here — but unless you have an allergy to it, or there's an actual reason why you cannot eat the food, or you have an underlying health condition, there is no reason why you need to be cutting out food groups of any kind. And it's so interesting because people get so upset when I say that.
Well, and talking about nuance, there's nuance to add here as well, right? Mm-hmm. Because this parallels what we were saying with the obesity post of, like, people saying, and you're promoting being overweight and obese. I'm like, no. Then people comment on my stuff when I talk about these things related to diet, and they're like, you're promoting a processed diet. And I'm like, no, I'm not. If you actually look at the way I eat, like, it's mostly just like unprocessed food. Right? I ate a ton of fruit. I ate some veggies. I eat a lot of meat, like just very basic foods. It's like, if you look at the way I eat very similar to a lot of these people who talk about not eating this processed garbage.
Yeah.
But the reason why I eat that way is, one, I enjoy it. Two, I care about the implications. This is going to open up a rabbit hole, because it's like, I'm going to say these foods that I'm eating have positive health impacts, but it doesn't imply that the other foods inherently have negative health impacts. when I talk about these things, because, like, there are foods that I think do have additional health benefits besides just like their macronutrient content, right? Like, we know veggies have different phytonutrients that have positive impacts on health. So I care about those things. So I eat these foods.
Yeah.
And three, honestly, if you want to have a healthy body composition, it makes sense that the majority of your diet looks like that.
Yeah.
What we're saying is that, like, if you eat a cookie, it's not going to ruin like a month's worth of progress. Or even besides that, like, one thing I said in that podcast episode is, like, listen, if you enjoy having like deep fried potato chips 3 times a week with your dinner and you're happy with your body composition, because there are people who are healthy already and they obsess over these things. If you already have a healthy body composition, your blood lipids are good, like, you're healthy, cutting out those potato chips is not going to have any measurable positive impact on your health. Right. So it's not like this food inherently has negative impacts on health. If you're meeting your nutrient needs, if you have a healthy body composition and you enjoy your diet and all of your blood biomarkers are good, that's a healthy diet. And that can look completely different for two different people.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's so great that you touched on that, because I think that again, people hear, oh, but you can have your cookie or you can have your chips 3 times a week. And they're like, you're telling people to eat chips every meal. And it's like, no, that's actually not what I said.
Now, on the other hand, and this is where it's hard for people to find balance, because this is how I talk to my clients too. And when we were talking about earlier about tough love, like you have clients that take that messaging a little bit too loosely. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, they're like, hey, I'm going out this weekend to dinner, like for whatever, anniversary, birthdays, whatever, celebration. Like, what should I do? Well, you know, if you don't do this too frequently, maybe don't worry about it too much. Maybe focus on some veggies, maybe focus on some protein. But honestly, if this is a one-off thing and it doesn't happen that frequently, you can also just enjoy yourself. And if this is a really important event for you, like, it's all good. Enjoy yourself. That's fine. But then they do that. And then next week it's something else. And the week after that, it's something else. And they blame it on things like, you know, based off how their lifestyle is at the moment, there's a lot of traveling and all these things. It's like, hey, now let's talk about the fact that you can't do this every single day. Mm-hmm. Right. So it is hard to find balance. I think that's where people, what you were mentioning earlier about people liking absolutes, that's where that comes from as well. Right. Cause it's like knowing, putting in the work to find what the appropriate balance is for you is hard. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I know how frequently I can go out to eat and enjoy myself and like go out for a drink and do this, and how frequently I have to eat at home for certain meals to like maintain the body composition that I want. I can do that intuitively because I've been working on this for years. Right. And I've been working on this for years because of insecurities that I had earlier in life. Right. And like, similar to your past experience where like you feel like you're in a good place now, but it took a lot of work to get there. And I think what people want with the absolutes is to skip the hard work that's necessary.
100%.
Yeah, that's really what it is. And two, it just gives you like a clear answer on what to do. But as you mentioned, I don't think it's that it's not sustainable, because for some people it is sustainable. Like, for some people, not eating cookies is sustainable. Why? They probably don't like cookies that much, but, or like, they're probably a psychopath, but.
I was going to say, people always give me a hard time because I'm a savory gal. And so like, I'll always like really like it, when I have a cookie, I can literally just have one and I don't think about it again.
I am too.
Yeah. But it's, and I have some friends who are the complete opposite. They're like, if I start eating ice cream or I eat a cookie, I feel like I want to eat all of them. And I'm like, no, I will feel sick and just, and so I get it. Cause it's everyone's different. So.
Yeah. And when we were talking about earlier about like no right or wrong, it's like, what I don't like is the messaging behind some of these recommendations of like, don't eat this. The messaging behind it is what I don't like. Mm-hmm. I actually follow some people that I respect and like, where I know the information that they're giving is not the best, but the information that they're giving is contextualized by them saying like, hey, this is actually my experience and this is what worked for me. I'm not telling you that this is the best scientific way to eat. And like, if you don't eat like this, you're going to die. They're just like, hey, actually people will follow a carnivorous diet. I have some people that I like and they follow a carnivorous diet, and I won't name names, but they're like, hey, listen, like, can you eat plants and can you eat other stuff? Of course. We're just sharing with you what's worked for us. I eat this way and I like it. And like, it works for me. I have no issue with that messaging.
Yeah.
I just like when people, I don't like when people try to rationalize something under the name of science when there's like no science to back it up.
Yeah.
That's my issue.
That's very fair. Cause it's similar to when people hear like holidays, everyone and their mothers comes in with like the new diet that they're trying. And for somebody, it worked to do keto, or somebody it worked to do paleo, or somebody did 75 hard and they were like, this was the thing for me. And just because it worked for them doesn't mean it's going to work for you. And it doesn't mean you have to do it.
Yeah.
There's totally. A million options.
You know, what you were saying earlier, about being somebody who likes savory foods more. Yes. I am too. Right. And so for example, like, I would never tell somebody, hey, if you go out to a restaurant and they bring bread and butter, don't eat bread and butter, right? But I actually try to avoid places that put out bread and butter at first because I have no self-control around it. Like, I will eat the whole loaf of bread and butter because I love bread and butter. Mm-hmm. So for me, like, I intentionally choose to either tell them just like not to bring it, or to go to places where I know they don't do that because I don't want to put myself in that situation.
That's now, I'm not tortilla chips.
I was going to say, if you go to a Mexican spot and they bring like chips and salsa, I'm going to destroy the chips and salsa. Right. So I intentionally don't put myself in those situations. And I would tell somebody like, hey, if you struggle with that, then really consider not doing that or not putting yourself in that situation. That doesn't mean that eating that food is inherently bad. It's
yeah,
giving the same recommendation with a different justification as to why.
It is. And I know some people want to take that also sometimes as you're now demonizing the food, or that's like creating unhealthy mindset around food. And it's like, well, actually, that's very healthy because you recognize that your control or your ability to feel good when you eat all those foods isn't really there. Yeah. And so you're creating a very healthy boundary, which is the same thing you need to do in many aspects of life.
Yeah. I spoke to a friend of mine who she really focuses on like the mental health aspect of dieting and all that. And I agree with her wholeheartedly on this. And she's like, because for example, some people would argue that that's an unhealthy like behavior, right?
Yeah.
From like a mental health perspective. I'm like, no, like if it's coming from a place of you're choosing this because you have ownership over your actions and the things you do. Like, it's not coming from a place of fear, right? Like, I'm not avoiding that food because I'm afraid to eat that food. I'm avoiding getting bread and butter because I don't want to eat 1,000 calories of bread and butter.
You know,
but it's not
like I will if it's there.
Yeah. And the opposite is true too, because this is where we were talking about it. She, do you know Astrid? She works for Team BioLane as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So she came on the podcast, and every year with Team BioLane, we had a get together here in Tampa.
Okay.
And when we had a get together here in Tampa, we went to an all you can eat sushi spot, and destroyed an insane amount of sushi. And we all left really uncomfortably. And Astrid and I were talking about this, like, because I think she's struggled with her like emotions and mindset around eating too. And I was like, how do you differentiate? How do you tell somebody like that's a healthy or unhealthy behavior? And she's like, easy. Like, I intentionally chose to do that. She's like, I intentionally chose to overeat. So it's not an unhealthy behavior. Like, it's unhealthy when you feel like you don't have control over your behaviors. But if you have control over your behaviors, it's not inherently an unhealthy thing to do from a mindset perspective, right? So I think that's a really good way of framing it too.
I love that, because it took me a really long time to learn that at all you can eat sushi, because I used to go and think I need to now eat all of the sushi. And it took me like probably honestly 8 to 10 times going there, getting 4 to 5 rolls and smashing them like they were nothing, and then feeling not great after. Yeah. I eventually, now I'm at a point where I can order like 3 and I will like finish them and I feel satisfied and I don't order another one. And it's like, that's a win that I actually celebrate to myself, because I'm like, wow, that's really big growth to recognize that I don't have to eat all the sushi when I go get it just because I can. And it's the same price.
Yeah. And last thing I'll touch on here, this is exactly when we talk about like the tough love thing earlier with clients, it goes hand in hand with this. Like whenever I give tough love to a client, I preface it by saying like, hey, I'm only saying this because you're expressing to me that you're unhappy with your outcomes and your behaviors. If you told me that you're perfectly happy with everything that you're doing and you don't feel bad about it, I wouldn't be saying this. This is only relevant because you've told me that you are unhappy with these behaviors, right? I had a client tell me that, you know, he's just gone on. It's awesome. He gets to go on vacation with his family all the time. He gains a ton of weight on vacation. And then he talks to me about it. And like, the one thing I asked him, I was like, well, do you feel bad about the fact that you're gaining weight? Or like, are you okay with it because you're enjoying yourself? And it's like, no, it's not really enjoyable. Like, prevents me from enjoying the rest of the vacation and stuff. And I'm like, all right, then this is something we should address. If you told me like, you're cool with it, you don't mind it, like, that's your prerogative, we wouldn't be talking about this. Like, I wouldn't be reprimanding you, right? So it is very context specific.
It is. I have a client who did the same thing. She's trying to get ready for a wedding. And every time she's very fortunate where she gets to travel a lot with her friends and her family.
Yeah.
And every time she would go, she would like super let loose is the exact way that she put it. She's like, I just want to let loose, because she's a demanding job, demanding lifestyle. And so when she travels, she views it as like off time. And I was like, cool. And then eventually she was like, I don't really like the fact that I keep gaining weight, or that it feels like my weight's really like slowed and my progress has slowed. And I'm like, hey, like, let's address when you're traveling then. And we had a conversation and we were just like, it doesn't mean you can't enjoy yourself while you're there. Just let's make it look a little bit different. And you can make conscious choices to do that, that don't suck, don't feel restrictive, and just are a little bit different than completely letting loose. But I know you have to go, because I know you have a call. I know, I was like, uh-oh. But thank you so much for coming on this show. I really appreciate it. And I definitely feel like I'm going to need to harass you into a part 2, because I feel like it was great.
No, I'm down. I'm down whenever. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for having me on, and I hope people enjoy the episode.
Of course. And then to everyone else, don't be a dick, especially to yourself. And I'll see you in the next one.
Bye.